Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Today we're going to focus on treatment considerations for children and adults, for that matter, with autism spectrum disorder.
Right.
Yep. All week we've talked about different aspects of autism, and today we're going to focus on the treatment part. And we're going to talk about treatment in three different domains: treatment with medication, sort of the behavioral aspect of treatment, and then we're going to talk some about treatment in schools as well, which is probably where we're going to spend most of our time.
Right, because when you talk about autism treatment, what most people do is they divide it into there's treatment for the core symptoms,
right?
Okay, which are the diagnostic criteria, the things we typically think about, like verbal communication, social interaction, stereotypic behaviors. So there are interventions for the core symptoms, and then there are interventions for associated symptoms.
Correct.
Because frequently children with autism have other disorders, and those other things need to be treated.
Right.
For example, we're seeing a person in our clinic right now, and he has a primary diagnosis of autism, but he also has ADHD.
Correct.
He also has some phobias, some obsessions, rather, not phobias, but upset. Yeah, one is a phobia. And so each of those things also has to be addressed.
Right.
So he's a sort of a classic case of there are core symptoms that we need to address, but he has associated symptoms, and those need a set of interventions as well.
Right, right. So let's start with, I don't know, do you want to start with the medical ones or do you want to start with the behavioral ones? What kind of save school for?
I think one way to do it, the most frequent approach is most researchers begin with early intervention.
Right.
Because autism, as we've said throughout the week, is one of those disorders where the earlier the treatment, the better the outcome. And so we want to identify and begin treatment as early as possible. And so there's a whole list of early interventions, usually from early interventions would be birth to two.
Right.
And then the next set would be toddlers to toddlers and preschoolers, because the interventions, you mentioned this, I don't know whether it was yesterday or the day before when we were talking about this, you said that the developmental repertoire changes as kids develop.
Right.
So what we do at birth to two is a little different from toddler and early childhood and toddler, which differs from
school age.
Early school age versus teenagers versus adults.
Right.
So at each developmental stage, you are going to have different needs and different behaviors that you're going to want to be addressing.
Right.
So if we begin with a developmental course, we begin with early intervention.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And most of those interventions are going to be sort of behavioral based. Don't get us wrong. We have certainly seen our fair share of really young children on medication for managing some of those related behaviors, especially when there's aggression or severe, extreme behaviors that are causing significant problems. A lot of times physicians will prescribe medications almost regardless of the child's age.
Right.
We've seen kids as young as
two or three.
Well, we would call them mood stabilizing medications if we wanted to be sort of talk about the specific purpose, but oftentimes those medications even fall within the class of either anticonvulsants or even antipsychotics sometimes.
Right.
So we'll save some of the medication stuff for in just a moment, but most of your early intervention is going to be more behavioral based. And so the primary method of treatment for children and adults of all ages with autism spectrum disorder is something called applied behavior analysis. ABA.
And applied behavior, you know, it sounds very formal and, mm-hmm. and there's this great technique, but all that ABA stands for Applied Behavior Analysis.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on B.F. Skinner's behavioral analysis.
Right.
B.F. Skinner worked with animals, rats and pigeons mainly. This is his techniques applied to humans.
Right.
Okay, that's where the applied part right. comes. So you're taking Skinner's basic... Now, what is Skinner's basic approach? Skinner's basic approach is, what do I need to do to increase this behavior?
Mm-hmm.
What do I need to do to decrease this behavior?
Right.
Okay, so that is it in a nutshell.
Right.
How do we increase the behavior? How do we decrease the behavior? If you're working with pigeons, it's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
If you're working with rats, it's very simple. You deny food,
mm-hmm.
then you put them in a cage where you can observe them,
mm-hmm.
and then when they do something right, you give them a food pellet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't do that with humans.
Right.
We'd like to,
right.
but of course you can't do that approach with humans. You can't deny food. So applied behavior analysis is that system applied mm-hmm. to humans.
Right.
And all of the interventions that, I would say virtually all of the interventions that we use for the core symptoms of autism are somehow or another related to applied behavior analysis.
Right. And part of that, there's a variety of reasons for that. You know, one of the reasons is that many of the other therapeutic modalities, therapeutic mm-hmm. methods, many of them require, well, cognitive behavioral right. therapy, for example, requires a set of cognitive skills necessitating, you know, different types of interactions, mm-hmm. engagements, communication,
right.
and you know, not to mention some of the insightful perspectives mm-hmm. that the person has to have. Many times, individuals with autism, not that we know for a fact that they can't do right. those things, they're not communicating those things. And when they're not communicating those things, it's really difficult to do that type of therapy.
And those therapies like cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavior, psychoanalysis, they're all verbal.
Right.
You know, you're talking to a person,
mm-hmm.
you're using language and communication. And what is it that children with autism don't do very well? They don't have good communication skills. So those other techniques don't work well.
Right.
So ABA lends itself because ABA can be done in a nonverbal.
Right.
If you have to, you can use a nonverbal approach
Absolutely.
To ABA.
Right. And if you want to see a good example of this, I thought, have you ever seen the TV show, I believe it was Parenthood. Did
mm-hmm.
you ever see that show? There was a great example because one of the children in that show had autism spectrum, and they had a behavior analyst who would come to the house, and mm-hmm. you know, it's intensive. So in many cases, it's almost daily.
It's 25 therapy. To 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the therapist works with not just the child specifically, but also the family to create a structure, a system, mm-hmm. a method for the entire family to follow.
That's right.
Because one of the critical aspects of ABA is consistency.
Right.
And it has to be done the same way every time by everyone.
Everybody has to be doing the same thing.
And any variability, any fluctuation, any changes can mm-hmm. result in significant problems.
Right. It's very confusing for the child.
Well, it's confusing for the child as it relates to learning the process.
Right.
But even once the child has learned the process, if there's a change, it's going to cause a disruption, and the child may respond in
right.
very unpredictable ways.
Right. And we probably should have mentioned, and you sort of mentioned it, the therapies, besides having interventions for core versus associated symptoms, one of the hallmark of autism interventions for autism are that they're very intensive.
Right.
And they're comprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
And intensive, you read these articles and it's always the same. It's the therapies, the interventions are done 25 to 40 hours per week.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
an enormous investment of time.
Right.
But if you want ABA to work, you have to
right.
spend that amount of time. Second, they're comprehensive,
mm-hmm.
which means they're done by everybody. So it's a center where the child goes to get therapy. It's the home, it's the school or mm-hmm. the preschool. So everybody needs to be involved. It's a comprehensive approach where everybody is involved, right. especially with young children.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So core versus associated symptoms and intensive and comprehensive.
Right, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Are the two hallmarks.
Right. So within the umbrella, under the umbrella of ABA, you're going to find a lot of specific things. So you may find social skills training. That's you may find, again, parent training. You may find a very simple right. and sophisticated, but it's, you know, because it can be the same thing, you know, right. both at the same time. Method of, you know, there's a lot of reward and punish. Not punish per se.
Reward and ignore.
Reward and ignore. Ignore is the punishment. Right. So, you know, example is if you, when you find, what,
what?
I'm like starting and, you know, I find like I was going to say something and then I was like, well, you know, I should say this as a precursor to that. And then I kept going backwards and all of a sudden I was at in the beginning. one of the hallmarks of autism we talked about before is sort of a restricted range mm-hmm. of interests and behaviors. And so you may have a situation where your child or a child with autism is very, very interested in, say, trains. Mm-hmm. And so the behavior analyst will use the child's interest in trains right. as a motivator to do some of the behaviors that they're less likely to do. Mm-hmm. So it may be sort of a token economy type of thing. If you do this, then I'll give you this train sticker That's or right. I'll give you this book with a train about trains or something to that effect. Usually they're small tokens, so they're not expensive or anything right. like that. Like I said, stickers. But they're still meaningful to the child because, you know, it can be presented like, you know, here's this book that we have of train mm-hmm. stickers. And so, yeah. you know, each time you do something, you can get a new sticker and it may be one that you don't have yet. And so you can try to get the whole collection. That would right. be something very motivating for a child who is really interested in trains. Yeah. And that way they can get the child to, or sort of use it as motivation to get the child to do some of the things that they may not be willing to do.
That they're not doing right
or
now.
Or they're not doing right.
And we want them to do it. And they're just not motivated to do it.
Right.
So we have to somehow find a way to start those behaviors.
Yeah. And as we describe that, of course, that sounds very basic, very simple. And I'm sure that many of you listening to this have tried that and said, oh, it doesn't work. It is impressive how effective it can be when it's consistent, when it's predictable, when it's, you know, when it's applied in a particular way.
Right.
Because, you know, with many of these kids, that it works. It works.
These are the techniques that have been shown to work. We refer to them as evidence-based interventions mm-hmm. or research-based. It means that we have done studies, and these are the things right. that have found we have found to be successful
right.
interventions. And the first, of course, the first is applied behavior analysis, mm-hmm. and most of the other techniques, in one way or another, come from or are based on applied behavior analysis. Mm-hmm. For example, there's a program, and I want to mention some of these names because some of you may never have heard of mm-hmm. these things, so at least you hear the name at least once. One is called discrete trial teaching, and discrete trial teaching is just another form of ABA mm-hmm. where you take a specific skill and you break it down into sub-skills and you teach each one of the sub-skills. So it's discrete trial teaching.
Very specific.
Okay. Very specific. Another is called pivotal response treatment. Pivotal responses treatment. And that's like, wow, what is pivotal responses treatment? Pivotal simply refers to the pivotal symptoms of autism. Mm-hmm. So the pivotal part is we're going to go after the core symptoms.
Right.
We're going to use ABA. We're going to go after mm-hmm. the core symptoms. Another one is, you know, I want my child to do the early start Denver model.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And you think, wow, the early start Denver model. The early start Denver model is simply ABA focusing on building social skills.
Right.
Okay, so the emphasis is specifically about social skills.
Right.
That's what the model sounds like. So they all sound very impressive, but if you think about, they're all based on ABA,
right,
and they all focus on different things.
Yeah.
There's another one called verbal behavioral therapy. Guess what that's about?
Right.
Okay. And they make it a little more complicated than it needs to be. We learned how to do a neuropsychological assessment years and years and years ago, before my son was born. You were born in the 70s, right?
74.
So it was, you were alive, but in diapers. And so, because you were in diapers until you're eight. But
eight.
Now, what was I talking about? And so this neuropsychological assessment talked about tact and manned, mm-hmm, and all these, you know, complicated. Well, manned is just, comes from the word command. So
mm-hmm,
it's doing what you're asked to do,
right,
you know, obey the command. So that's verbal behavioral therapy. It's ABA applied to verbal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can see that all of these things. There's another one called floor time. You know,
mm-hmm,
floor time, as the name implies, is a parent and a child on the floor. And it was designed by Stanley Greenspan, who was a wonderful developmental pediatrician in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And he developed this thing called floor time. And what floor time does is it focuses on six developmental milestones.
Right.
Well, not surprisingly, it was developed by a developmental pediatrician who was concerned about milestones.
Right.
And the last one is relationship development intervention. And again, right, that's another, it's called RDI.
Mm-hmm.
RDI is simply improving social skills. There were two others, this TEACH and SCIRTS program.
Mm-hmm.
Those are usually school-based programs.
Right.
TEACH is a school-based,
right,
program. Again, does the same sorts of things. So these are all to treat the core symptoms,
mm-hmm,
of autism.
Right.
Okay. So these are various programs. And if you go into this website of Autism Speaks, and that there are links to each one of these,
mm-hmm,
so that you can click on the link and it'll talk to you about,
yeah,
the Early Start Denver model.
Right.
It'll talk to you about floor time.
Yeah.
Again, they're all based on ABA. Each one has a little different focus,
mm-hmm,
because it depends on this child with autism. There's a wonderful line that I meant to mention earlier in the week that said, if you know one child with autism, you know one child with autism,
mm-hmm,
because they're all different.
Right.
And so you have to choose the one that would work best for a particular child.
Right.
Typically, and we talked about it the other day, you don't have, there aren't many autism programs because each child needs something a little bit different.
Right.
So this is not something, autism is not one of those things that we can use these programmatic approaches.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really an individualized approach.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you mentioned, those are the treatments for the core symptoms. Now, there's many associated symptoms.
That's
and
right.
It could be, you know, speech problems. Oftentimes, children with autism spectrum disorder will have motor difficulties, so they'll have difficulties with their sort of large muscles or mm-hmm, small muscles, fine motor skills. And so there's a lot of different specific therapies for some of those associated,
right,
things, whether it's speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and,
mm-hmm,
and so on. And those therapies, again, as you were just saying, are used in specific cases for specific children's needs.
That's right. There's something called autism sleep disorders or something.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of sleep problem that children with autism, not all children with autism have,
right,
sleep problems, but if,
right,
your child has a sleep problem, then you may want to try melatonin, mm-hmm, or some other medication to help with sleep.
Right.
As you said, some children do have problems, especially when we talk about autism spectrum disorder, some children with autism have speech and language difficulties,
right,
and some don't.
Mm-hmm.
We have children in our program here, many of them who have the diagnosis, but their speech and language skills, mm-hmm, are just fine.
Right.
But maybe their motor skills,
mm-hmm,
are deficient,
right,
or their social interaction skills are. So then you have to develop an intervention for the associated symptom.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a child has autism and ADHD, then you may want to use medication for the ADHD.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's a nice segue to go to sort of the medical treatment of autism. And the first thing that we have to mention here, of course, is that there is no cure. We mentioned that earlier this week. Yeah. But, you know, there are no medications for autism.
Right.
There's not a class of medications called autism-related medications or autism spectrum disorder medications. It just doesn't exist.
We have antidepressants, anxiolytics, anti-epileptic medication. We don't have anti-autism medications.
Right.
There is no such thing.
So there's not a cure. There's not a medication specifically for autism. So what medications are for, in the way that they're primarily used, is to treat some of these specific symptoms. Now, they may be core symptoms, or they may be some of those associated or related symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, the medication is to treat those symptoms. Not autism. So if a child is, you know, part of the core symptoms is that rigid, repetitive, stereotypic type behavior.
Right.
And if part of those, that repertoire of behavior is aggression, you know, they get really, they overreact, they're hypersensitive to stimuli, either visual or auditory stimuli. Sometimes medications can be used to just calm that down so that they're not as reactive, not as volatile or aggressive. And so sometimes, and we were talking about them just a moment ago, sometimes the what they'll call mood stabilizers, and I think, again, it's always important to remember that mood stabilizers isn't a specific class of medications. It's a general class that includes medications from lots of different categories, including anti-epileptic medications, but also antipsychotic medications. They all kind of fall into that same category of mood stabilizers. So we have medications like Abilify and Risperdal that are antipsychotics that are often used for kids with autism spectrum disorder to just calm some of that agitation and irritability.
Yeah, some children with autism are irritable, are hyper-reactive to environmental events. Other children are not. So again, it's a highly individualized consideration.
Yeah. Sometimes kids with autism will have many, many obsessive issues and anxiety-related issues, and so they may be on anti-anxiety medications, usually not the benzodiazepines like many adults are given, like Xanax and those kind of Valium and those kinds of medications, but instead they're often given again medications that fall into a couple of different classes, including antidepressants, some things like Paxil and Prozac and Zoloft and Lexapro and things like that. They maybe prescribe some of those medications just to help cool down some of those anxieties. You mentioned ADHD already, so sometimes they're given the or the stimulant medications to help calm some of those ADHD symptoms. But again, the core message here is that there's not a medication for autism. The medications are only used to manage some of these associated symptoms and behaviors that are causing problems for the child in different settings.
Right, that's right. And so, you know, there's no reason why a child with autism can't have something else. Because children without autism have those other conditions. There's no reason why a child with autism can't have those other conditions.
Right. Just
depression or anxiety, ADHD, obsessive compulsive disorder.
Right.
No. No reason why they can't have it. You talked about medication. There's also a literature emerging about dietary changes.
Right.
You know, and you know a little about that, don't you?
Yeah, it's interesting research. And it's really in its...
It's in its infancy.
And it's in infancy,
isn't
but
it?
It's... It's been around for a while, but nothing has been really definitive. But they're talking about, you know, diets very similar to what we've talked about before with ADHD and depression and lots of other things where you're kind of getting rid of some of those additives, preservatives, going more to a whole food. There have been some research researchers who have talked about even more plant-based diets, ketogenic type diets for kids with autism. And you can have both, you know, ketogenic. We could do a whole, we could do weeks on ketogenic diets because, you know, there's a lot of misperceptions about what ketogenic diets are. And we typically think of like Atkins diet when it comes to ketogenic. And, but, you know, there are vegans who are ketogenic. Right. So they eat no meat or no animal based products at all. And still ketogenic.
Diet. Right. Yeah. And, you know, because when we talk about foods and the foods we eat, it's that, again, that gut-brain connection. Mm-hmm. And so there are foods that do irritate.
Right.
They do cause inflammation. And it may be the inflammation that's contributing to some of the problems. And so you have things like gluten or dairy or other foods that we know can create digestive system irritability and inflammation, which would contribute. I don't know that they cause, but it could contribute to the symptoms. And if you cool down the gut, if you cool down the digestive system, you might see a relief of symptoms.
Right.
It's certainly worth doing. I mean, you can live without gluten.
Right.
You can live without large amounts of carbohydrates. Right. And so there really is no harm to try these dietary, not supplements, but dietary restrictions.
Right. Yeah, there's a writer, a neurologist, he's becoming very, very well known, Dr. Perlmutter, who talks a lot about, you know, the relationship between grains in general and a lot of these developmental and psychiatric and neurological issues. So definitely check out some of that work because it's very, very interesting.
Yeah,
so.
Interesting stuff.
So, so that leaves us with school.
Yes.
So we got to talk a little bit about school-related interventions. And, you know, we spoke yesterday about some of these problems, some of the problems related to educationally-based programs for autism spectrum disorder. And that is, first off, the diversity of presentation for kids with autism spectrum disorder. Right. There's, you know, everything from verbal, you know, AP, honors, you know, college classes to nonverbal and struggling to, you know, even be able to remain in a classroom most of the day.
That's right.
So there's a broad spectrum of kids with autism.
Exactly. And we talked about why there aren't more programs for children with autism because parents, you know, frequently people will call us and say, well, do you know a school that has a program for kids with autism? And it's almost a question that you can't answer because it's so individualized.
Right.
You really can't talk about a program for children with autism. You can talk about a program for children with this kind of autism or this severity of autism.
Right.
We have a school in our county, a private school that has a program for children with autism. But I think it's a program for children with more severe symptoms.
Right.
Because if a child has mild symptoms, that child can function in a regular classroom.
Right.
If their symptoms are too severe, they might not even be able to be contained in a public school building.
Right.
Okay. And so it really depends on the child. And we said earlier, if you know one child with autism, you know one child with autism. So it probably is not fruitful to look for a program for children with autism.
Right.
You want to talk to a school that will meet the needs of a child with autism.
Right.
You know, are they in a position, do they have the expertise
right.
to meet the core and associated symptoms
right.
of children with autism? If they do, remember the principal we met with about a year or so ago? If you have a child with autism, put that child in his hands because he will do the right thing.
Right.
He will make sure that whatever needs that child has, his teachers will meet those needs.
Right.
Okay. So it's more a matter of doing the right thing rather than finding the right program.
Right. Okay. So when it comes to, we'll try to break this down pretty easily, or make it easy to digest, hopefully, as we were just talking about food. The benefit, I'll say it that way, the benefit of a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder through the schools, through IDEA, right. is that it affords the child a bit, possible services.
Right.
Now, you know, if a child has autism spectrum disorder, again, I would not ever recommend automatically putting that child in a classroom labeled autism spectrum disorders. But it may be fruitful to have that child go through the process of getting an IEP.
That's right.
Because if there are needs that the child has, either now or, you know, at some point in the future,
that's right.
having that identified, you know, when you are getting started with school or at any point in during the right. child's schooling, can be very helpful in making sure that services are available right. as soon as they're needed.
And it would be
you don't want to play catch up later on.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say. It would be great if you could get the diagnosis early mm-hmm. and get an IEP in right. place while the child is 3 or 4 years old. Okay. The diagnosis can be made at 2 or 3 or 4.
Right.
Get that IEP in place quickly mm-hmm. because an IEP never goes away.
Right.
I mean, you can sign off. I mean,
right,
you can
right.
say,
you can.
I don't need it anymore. But as long as... unless you decide to get rid of the IEP stays with the child,
right.
and you keep it because you never know when you might need
right.
it.
And we'll say that some schools, admittedly, some schools will sort of push back on that a little bit because especially if the child's not having any educational problems mm-hmm. at the time, they'll push back on that. And I understand that. I can appreciate that.
Right.
However, the argument that I would make is that, you know, when you're talking about something like autism, an issue can come up that you do not predict.
Can't anticipate.
And right. you want to make sure that, you know, if the school resists putting mm-hmm. an IEP in place
right.
early on, then at least have them agree to something that you know, in the event of an issue, that they'll be able to, you know, act exactly. very quickly and put something in place mm-hmm. very, very, very soon.
Right.
Because you don't want to wait. You don't want yeah. to allow problems to perpetuate.
And I wouldn't take the chance. If a child is identified at 3, I would move toward an IEP
right.
because eventually you're probably going to need it.
Right.
I mean, and so get everything in place now.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't ever have to use it, that's fine. But it's there if you need it. What an IEP does is it provides contractual legal safeguards
right.
for a child.
Right.
And it's the only way to get those is with
right.
an IEP. You don't get them with a Section 504 plan.
Right.
And you want these legal protections because that's what would be best for the child.
Right, absolutely. So now, when it comes to some specifics mm-hmm. related to, as you said, you know, every child with autism is different, and so some may be getting speech therapy, mm-hmm. some may be getting physical or occupational therapy through the school system.
Right.
Some may need a self-contained classroom
mm-hmm.
Because of communication issues or
right.
because of behavioral issues mm-hmm. or whatever. But so all of those types of needs are going to vary.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some specific things that, you know, can be helpful and applied in the school setting for kids with various mm-hmm. needs. So, for example, you know, those children with autism spectrum disorder that are nonverbal, you know, they have communication devices
right.
that I've seen even children who are completely nonverbal mm-hmm. Be able to use to communicate their needs. So it'll, you know, they can be taught that, you know, pushing this button, it, you know, the machine will say this and that will serve mm-hmm. this need.
Right.
And so they can use these, I forgot what they're called.
Communication boards?
Communication boards. I knew mm-hmm. it was something boards.
Right.
So just a communication board to
right.
communicate complex ideas and thoughts,
right.
but they're pushing these buttons instead of having to generate the
right.
the verbal mm-hmm. you know, communication themselves.
Right. Right. I mean, not every kid needs one.
Right.
But if you do, it's there.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's those kinds of things. Many times schools will be able to set up, we were talking earlier about how children with autism sort of, they can get stuck, sort of
yes.
rigid sometimes. And you know, we've worked with schools to help them develop safe zones, or we call them different things for depending on the age of the child. We call it a safe zone, or a cubby, or something like that, where the child, when they start getting stuck, they can go there to sort of retreat. If they're overstimulated, they can go there, and it's a low sensory area, so it's a little bit darker, not as much visual stimuli, so they can go there and sort of recuperate. But they're taught that specifically.
Do we still have video game I don't know what they're called, video game parlors in malls? I mean, I haven't been in a mall for a while.
You know, arcade?
Is that what they're called?
Video game parlor.
Arcade?
That is...
Do they still have them?
Sometimes.
Because that
I've
would
never
be,
heard it called a parlor before.
That would be overwhelming for a child.
Well, absolutely.
Because of all the noise and the light. When you said all the lights and everything.
All the
noise
lights
and the lights would be totally overwhelming. But a lot of classrooms are like that.
Absolutely.
You know, if you have a regular classroom in today's schools, it is expected that your students will be moving around and interacting with each other, which is exactly the opposite of what children... So... We want the children to be included.
Right.
We want inclusion, but we also need calm.
Right.
And many classrooms are not calm today. The principals, administrators don't want them to be calm. They want them to be places where active learning occurs.
Mm-hmm.
That can be overwhelming for kids with autism.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So.
So it's not a parlor, huh?
I don't. See.
You better be nice.
I don't even know how to respond to that kind of stuff sometimes.
You just need to. Inhibit.
I'm working on it.
Those responses.
I'm working on it. I took my medication.
You did?
So, anything else about schools?
No, I think the main thing about schools is protect your child with an IEP, and don't look for a program.
Mm-hmm.
Look for teachers and administrators who will do the right thing, which is meet the needs of this particular child.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So. Yeah. All right.
Good.
Is that it? Oh,
that's it.
All right. So that's treatment. Before we go, we've been mentioning all week about the You Are Not Alone Coming Out of the Darkness program at Winter Haven, or Theater Winter Haven. I always want to say Winter Haven Theater, but it's Theater Winter Haven. And so if you live here in the Central Florida area, on Thursday, May 24th at 7:30 p.m., they're doing a great looking program all about suicide prevention awareness.
And May 14th, I believe, is when 13 Reasons...
May 18th.
Is it the 18th?
Mm-hmm.
Is going... So it's this same...
It's the Friday before that.
Right? Mm-hmm. So the Friday before this, 13 Reasons goes into season two.
Right.
Okay. And so I don't have any idea what they plan to do with it.
I don't know.
But this program on the 24th I'd highly recommend.
Yeah.
If you can at all go there, it'd be a great program, and it's an even better cause.
Absolutely.
Because the proceeds go to Peace River Center and the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention.
Right.
So lest we forget, try to save some time on the 24th.
Absolutely. And the if you want more information, contact Theater Winter Haven. So it's THEATRE, Winter Haven, all one word, .com. And you can get their contact information and give them a call and find out more about the program. I don't know that there's a specific website for it or anything.
I haven't seen one.
But
I'm sure the theater will.
Yeah, they'll be able to give you lots of information.
We're not thrown at all by that THEATRE, because we have connections in the UK.
That's right.
You know,
That's right.
Our podcast goes to the UK through PsychReg, and so those REs don't bother us anymore.
I have to admit, I miss it when I'm writing my writing the titles or the show notes. I miss some of the different spellings. Right. Behavior with the O-U-R.
Right.
And thankfully, Den catches those when I make those mistakes. Sorry. Thank you, Den.
He keeps us English. He keeps us with the royal received pronunciation.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, the wedding is tomorrow. Don't forget. We have the royal wedding tomorrow.
Is it tomorrow or is tomorrow. It the day that this podcast goes out?
Oh, tomorrow would be Sunday, right?
If we're recording today, today's Friday.
For Saturday.
It's going out Saturday. The royal wedding is on...
today.
Saturday.
Saturday.
All right.
Yeah, because so, you won't hear this until Saturday.
Right, so you may
you're probably missing it.
You may be... if.
How many hours?
If you're listening to this instead of watching the wedding...
We love you.
You're the best.
If you're doing that.
You're the best.
In our country... tomorrow is Mother's Day.
Right. Sunday is Mother's Day.
So don't forget that, too. So
yeah.
Remember Mom.
Yeah. You know. Okay. Good grief.
Busy weekend.
It is. It's going to be a busy weekend. So, Minute. You know, stay in touch with us. We've received a few nice...
We're getting more.
Comments.
Yeah. I think we're getting more, more people commenting.
Yeah.
More and I love it. I love when we get those.
Absolutely.
Messages.
Absolutely.
So talk to us. Yeah. We're lonely. We're lonely. We would love to. I'm lonely. He is too. Well, he's too busy. You're going to be gone all week playing football.
Yeah, yeah.
Not American football.
Who sets up a soccer tournament on Mother's Day weekend?
I'm trying to get work done, and he's going to be out doing soccer.
I'm going
to
lose
2 days,
weekend.
Right? You're going to lose the entire. Yeah, you're losing both days. So. We'll be here tomorrow.
So. Yeah,
we'll be here today. We are here today.
So we'll just refer to this as the close of the show banter. Just bantering.
Well, I think people, I want to share my life with our listeners.
That's well, you should. All right. So, okay. All right. But do write to us. We'd love it if you wrote a review or rated us on iTunes. Love that you comment and subscribe to us on YouTube. It's fantastic stuff. I'd love to see our YouTube subscriptions increase. That'd be
and
great.
You saw the one, it was a person who is doing some graduate work in the area of autism, and she happened to find our website, found it extraordinarily helpful, and I hope she sees this one on treatment. I think she'll really appreciate this
Absolutely.
One. So, yes, but continue writing. I'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. So, that is it for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.